Good morning. Welcome to our roundtable panel this morning. Very nice to have you with us. It is Monday, the 14th of November. A delight to have you all here. Let us begin. We'll introduce our panel. We'll remind you of how you can write to us, and we will then get started. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning, and congratulations on a wonderful Friday night appearance. That you did.
We did a nice show with, first of all, just sincere thanks to Andy Borowitz, who donated everything and gave us a beautiful evening on Friday night.
Right.
I think it was funny. It was cathartic. It was, I think, what people wanted it to be in the sense of, you know, you can chuckle and you can, we can laugh. Some of it is absurd and then some of it we have. And he made the point very clearly that we had to, you know, take it seriously and be aware. And what he didn't want people is just to become complacent. And so I thought there were some good words there. And it was a very nice evening. So again, thanks to Andy Borowitz and for all the
and
wonderful.
To you.
Well, thank you, and to you, and for all the wonderful people who came out. We had a very nice crowd. It was terrific. And the Bar Devon, man, those people at the Bar Devon, Chris Silva and his entire team are just fantastic. That place is beautiful.
It is.
God, it's beautiful. I just
and generous.
Oh, so generous. So, thank you to everyone. All right. Rosemary Arameo is here.
She is the
director of the journalism program at the University at Albany, and it's a thrill to have her with us, as it is.
I had an interesting discussion on Saturday with members of the Fulton County Democratic Women's Club on how to not take back anything we said, but hold the new administration accountable. It was cathartic and interesting, and I liked it very much. Thank you.
Was that event scheduled prior to the election?
It was.
Okay.
So everyone
thought it was
going to be like a coven dancing around, you know, in celebration. It turned out to be something different.
Well, congratulations on that, and glad. I think all these things where we get people together and we talk and we share our thoughts is an important,
healthy.
Very healthy, which is certainly what we're trying to do in the program. Teresa Bourgeois is here. Special thanks to Teresa because I sent her an email on Thursday asking if she could fill in. The problem is I never sent it. It was in my drafts file, so it wasn't yesterday afternoon I thought to myself, I wonder why Teresa didn't get back to me. She always gets back to me so quickly. And then I realized I hadn't sent it. So I sent it, and she said, of course, I'll be on. So I thank you very much for that. Very
delighted
sweet.
To be
thank
here.
You.
Glad to be here.
Appreciate it. Communications consultant Teresa Bourgeois. So we have our group this morning, and we are good to go. Let us begin. A reminder, by the way, panel@wamc.org. That is how you get your letters in. If you have an old email address, don't use it. Use panel, P-A-N-E-L, panel@wamc.org. To get your letters.
I am getting, Joe, for whatever it's worth, I am getting a lot of what I can only describe as troll letters. Now, see, you liberals really got it. You got it, and now you have to eat it, and you're too bad for you and all the rest of it. And, you know, it's similar to what kids are experiencing in schoolyards now. Bullying is back in favor, and it's not.
Yeah, I wonder why. Yeah. Possibly because there's a troll headed to the White House.
Yeah, it's not.
I mean, role modeling.
Dave Chappelle had a great line in his Saturday Night Live monologue about we now have an internet troll as our president.
He stole it from him.
He had many great lines in that.
Time Magazine had an interesting critique of Saturday Night Live. It was annoyed with them for acting like they were in mourning and sad, but not saying why. I didn't have any trouble understanding why.
I thought it was perfect.
A very big piece in Time Magazine.
And of course, there was that letter, Joe. I know you want us to talk about it at some point today, from the Times publisher and executive editor. I read it three times.
So did I.
I didn't quite get
it.
No one has.
I
liked the interpretation I heard you give this morning, Alan, which was the most my friends, my sister and I are both in newspapers for years, and it's like, what? Alan says it's too,
just so Time Magazine doesn't yell at us for not explaining what we were, what we're talking about. let me just say that this is a letter the New York Times printed in its Sunday edition. to our leaders from the publisher and executive editor. And basically, and again, this will, so I can't really tell you what they're saying because I don't completely understand it. But they start off, when the biggest political story of the year reached a dramatic and unexpected climax late Tuesday, our newsroom turned on a dime and did what it has done for nearly 2 years, cover the 2016 election with agility and creativity. After such an erratic and unpredictable election, there are inevitable questions. Did Donald Trump's sheer unconventionality lead us and other news outlets to underestimate his support among American voters? What forces and strains in America drove this divisive election and outcome? Most important, how will a president who remains a largely enigmatic figure actually govern when he takes office? And then it goes on. I'm sorry, Rosemary.
So what does it mean? Donald Trump took it as a, yes, Alan was right. Donald Trump took it as an apology. I don't get any apology out of that. Alan suggests that it is a call to support and to stand behind news organizations that actually try
Like
the Times that actually try to get at the truth.
Look, the Times did, well, you can say actually get at the truth. I think the Times knew this was a very dangerous candidacy. And I think correctly, they threw caution to the wind. And I think
they weren't the only one.
No,
every newspaper
I didn't
did
say
but
that.
But the other thing is that they started the email whole hullabaloo over, I think, not very much, started
with
the New York Times.
Right.
So
with the wrong story.
So
with the story that had to be walked back.
So if I'm hearing from the trolls, can you imagine what the New York Times is?
Oh,
it must be
overwhelming.
Now. And so I sort of saw this as a almost meek, you know, approach to everybody saying, hey, look, we're all in this together. We did what we thought was right. We need your support now.
Yeah, and I did see it as a bit of an apology.
Yeah, I thought it was a we got it, you know, we missed part of this story. Not apologizing for how hard they went at the story, but, you know, we missed part of the story. And journalism is more important than ever now, so please keep subscribing.
Wow.
And I wasn't clear on what it was, but it was interesting that Trump tweeted out, President-elect still tweeting in this way, but about how they, you know, they've lost subscribers, and then they came back and tweeted out, in fact, they have not, they've gained subscribers. And I was also interested to see reporters from the Washington Post and others urging that people subscribe to their competitor, to the New York Times, and you know, in response. But I thought
the newspaper of that caliber should have been able to write something that was not debatable, that we wouldn't be here with different opinions on what the heck it meant.
Well, that was my question. In fact, I even wrote it down as a note for today. But why did they have to write anything?
Right.
Exactly.
I'll tell you why. They're scared to death. I'm telling you. Look, there's something
scared about what.
Let me help you with this one, Teresa. There's something
mansplaining.
Stop.
Let me help you with this one.
Well, because she asked a question,
I'm wondering what you think they're scared about.
Come on, you know. Let's not have any of that underhanded, you know.
It wasn't underhanded. It was right.
There's nothing underhanded.
Very direct.
Solar plexus stuff. No, let me tell you. They are worried. They're scared. And there's something that we used to talk about during the Johnson administration called the law of anticipated reaction. And what that means, Joe, I don't want to talk to anybody else here because I might be accused of mansplaining, is what that means is the law of unanticipated reaction is that any anticipated reaction is anything can happen. So you're in your bed at the middle of the night and you're Arthur Sulzberger or you're Dean Baquette or you're anybody, Alan Chartok, anybody, and you're saying, okay, if they come after us, what could they do? And you imagine much worse than it will ever really happen. And I suspect that the Times is, which is on, like every other newspaper in America, under tremendous financial strain, is saying, well, you know, they have their own ideas about what could happen if this guy turns to be the despot that some people think he's going to become. I think that's what motivated that letter.
whatever the motivation, I think the key going forward is that we're going to need some really serious journalism and investigative journalism, and one hopes that they will not shy away from that, despite the fact that, you know, some of the Trump people are emphasizing that there's an enemies list and they keep the enemies list.
Right.
And, exactly.
But I think that some of the print journalists did a terrific job in this campaign. The broadcast journalists, I would say, in many cases, less so.
Very much less so.
I'm trying to be generous, but the journalism will be critical over this next 4 years. Investigative journalism, and clearly they're under assault by the Trump campaign. They've already, not having the typical pool, the press pool, and other things that they've had. But I think it's up to all of us, who will depend on the information that can be provided through journalists, to support them.
And will Trump stop at anything? I mean, as you pointed out so perceptively, Teresa, a few seconds ago, he lied about them. He said they're losing thousands of subscribers when they're not.
It's not true.
Now,
he lied.
Think about what liars in the White House.
Think about people with enemies lists in the White House. We've been through this before. I think it's a very challenging time, and we will need serious journalists like the New York Times. Again, I have no idea what the letter meant, but I know that we need them now more than ever.
There was something that Andy Borowitz mentioned on Friday at our event, and I thought it was a really great point, and that is that because many news organizations feel that they miss the story, they are putting the Trump voters now as like some sort of oracle and just looking at them as if they have the magic key to the understanding and are kowtowing to this group. And as Andy Borowitz said, well, look at who they are and
can I say bunk to that whole theory, by the way?
What?
I do not believe that we missed that working class people were upset. There have been hundreds of stories about
I agree
that.
With you.
However, what we missed was that they were so eager to throw a Molotov cocktail into the system that they would vote in favor of this candidate who has so many flaws and is so iffy.
And
one last thing.
Yeah, sure,
and just didn't thought that he would be the person who could save them. So it isn't that they missed the story. It's that they miscalculated.
The angst. The level of angst. One last thing, and that is, I've been saying on this program again and again and again that no matter what happened, that 40% that was reported in the national polls did not budge. No matter what the guy said, no matter how he said it, it did not budge. And he said it. He said it himself. He said, it doesn't matter. I could jump off the building or whatever, and they do whatever I told them.
Shoot somebody.
But the thing that's fascinating to me is the group of Trump supporters who are the economically insecure, and I think that's the group that they felt that they missed. Not the far-right, alt-right, Breitbart group, but those in the middle who are economically insecure. But what did not get successfully conveyed to them is that, and they will soon find out, and we then have to wonder what will happen then, that the Trump policies, are not on their side.
They're going to be hurt more than us.
Right, that the Trump tax policies are not to their benefit. The Trump health care policies are not to their benefit. The trade policies that he's espousing will not be to their benefit. And how that information did not break through, I think, is an interesting question. And what happens now when those folks at his rallies, who, legitimately are economically insecure, then realize...
You saw it on the front page of the New York Times this weekend, where they went out to Indianapolis to that carrier plant where 1,500 jobs are about to migrate out of the country. And they all said, look, we voted for him. It was our last shot. We felt this was it, but he better deliver. And that's what's going to happen. And he's got... strategists now who are working at keeping him in office. Alan has said that over and over again. That's what politicians do best. And they're already talking about a plan, which I would like to see it if it comes true, which is that he would forgive some of the college debt. It's a very generous program, as it's p- put out. God knows what it'll actually, how we'll pay for it, or if Congress will go along with it. But okay, that would help. That would help the working class.
And so he's saying he's going to have an infrastructure program, and there's debt forgiveness program, and the health care they're going to repeal and replace, and they're going to do these things. But then you look at the budget proposals, and you look at his tax cuts that are geared toward the top 1%, and the numbers simply don't add up.
Well, the Nation I'm sorry to keep interrupting, but I'm agreeing with you. The Nation came out with an article also this weekend saying, okay, infrastructure repair, how's he going to do it? If it's like he does his own projects, you're bringing in private companies that will get a lot of profit by being paid by the government, and that does not help
in
people
tax,
either.
The Obama administration tried repeatedly to get an infrastructure package through the Congress, and they got
And then you say that they didn't do good work, and then you don't pay them.
Well, I mean, and then it goes back to the message getting out. I mean, how Michigan, Flint, that was all Republican. The car industry tanking until Obama saved it, that was Obama. That was Democrats who saved it. But they just didn't do enough. And Hillary Clinton didn't go back after Bernie Sanders beat her there. Democratic congressmen are complaining about that, saying all she had to do was come out and talk. She had to do her whole listening thing. She didn't do it. That is definitely a miscalculation on her part. But for people not to see through that.
But when you have I'm sort of going back to Trump. When you have a person who consistently does not tell the truth,
right,
and has what, and he has a range of views on the same policy. So, for instance, healthcare. I'm fascinated by the healthcare. They're going to repeal and replace Obamacare.
With what?
Well, exactly.
More power to the insurance companies.
With what? And he says they're going to allow across state lines. Well, the Journal of American Medical Association, JAMA, has done an analysis of what he's put in writing, and that if he does what he's put down in writing, not what he says, but the proposals in writing, then it will eliminate the protections for people who have pre-existing conditions. And now he says he's not going to do that, but his written proposals say he is. Does he even understand the complexity? He says he's going to continue to allow families with children who are up to, young adults up to 26 to stay on their parents' rolls. But that's not what his proposals say.
We have just under a minute, about 30 seconds. So remind you that you can email us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. When we come back, I want to talk about the announcements that were made over the weekend. We have Mike Pence now in charge of the transition. We have Ryan Priebus as the chief of staff, and Stephen Bannon, who will be a strategist, chief West Wing strategist, and senior counselor.
What is the title? Chief strategist.
We'll find
and
out
counselor.
More after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel for this Monday, the 14th of November. Very nice to have you with us. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Teresa Bourgeois join us this morning. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. We've been talking about many aspects of a new Trump administration, of the president-elect, and some of the announcements that he's made over the weekend. And we have a lot more to get to, but let's get to some of the letters and we'll further the conversation that way, because I know we have a lot of interesting thoughts in those letters. Alan.
Okay. Dear panel, I've seen some reports that Hillary is leading in the popular vote with more votes still to count. Can you speak about the likelihood that we can eliminate the Electoral College and move to a more direct election process? That ain't going to happen.
No, not
I'm
happening.
Speaking to it. Okay, there you go.
But it does speak to the issue of mandate, where the Trump folks were saying that they had a tremendous mandate. And they don't, and they need to understand that if they're to govern the country.
Yeah. And you know the way
it's more bunk coming out in a lot of the postmortems is that she led slightly. She's not leading slightly. This is a bigger margin than Gore had. It's a bigger margin than Nixon had. So no mandate and no slight advantage in the popular vote.
It's upwards of 2 million votes. And again, if he wants to govern and hold the country together, they need to realize that.
Let me just point out real politics to all of you, Joe. I don't want to talk to anybody else in the room. Because I'll be accused of mansplaining as opposed to she-splaining. And that is, as soon as somebody wins by two votes, they say, I have a tremendous mandate. They always do.
Right.
And that's just the way that it is. So we can be happy with ourselves. I would be interested to hear Alan's analysis of the push to get the Electoral College to vote their conscience and appoint Hillary on December 19th. That sure ain't going to happen. Remember how these people are chosen. The electors are chosen by the party. And believe me, if you have the head of the Republican National Committee coming in, why would anybody, why in the world would anybody change their vote?
He's our president.
Pie in the sky.
He's our president. I think we need to focus our energy on what he's going to do, what he says he's going to do, and how that will affect average working Americans.
Brucey says, glad to hear Morning Edition uses the term white nationalist, anti-Semite, while referring to Steve Bannon. Call it what it is. Don't sugarcoat. Don't normalize these ongoing awful appointments and news. Hey, you know, I know that Teresa Bourgeois has done a lot of research on Steve Bannon. What can you tell us?
Well, the most concerning news over the weekend for me was that Steve Bannon is going to be in the White House. And I think that people should read about what he has done at Breitbart News and read, you know, go to the Southern Poverty Law Center website and read their, you know, hate list watch about what he has done and what he espouses. I'm just curious, and I ask this question seriously, how can he get the security clearance necessary for the job that Trump has asked him to hold?
James Comey will work it out.
And I think that normalizing the behavior, I think the writer there is absolutely right. You cannot, should not normalize the behavior of someone like that. And the racial animosity that he has stirred, his attacks against Mrs. Obama, Michelle Obama, his attacks against Barack Obama, it's the far right wing, you know, what they used to call the far, you know, the swamp of the Republican Party has now moved into the White House. Yeah, that's the swamp that needs to be drained. But I think we need to be vigilant against hate, and the kind of hate that he espouses against people who are not white, and the kind of rallying that he has done of the white supremacist groups in this country. It's not what America is about, and he's now been given a leadership position, and we should all be very mindful of how dangerous that is. I mean, it's one thing for the president certainly to have the people around him he chooses, but you have to understand, in some cases, you know, it's not the right choice. And
what does a chief strategist and senior advisor do? Is that a higher rank, although more informal than Reince? Is Priebus's appointment like a cover up for the real power behind the throne?
Or is it the exact opposite?
I don't know.
In other words, they take this guy, they want to keep the constituency, they put him in a room near the Oval Office, Priebus calls the shots in terms of where they're going. So we don't know. The answer is, if you look at this guy's picture on the television when it's shown with his unkempt, you know, face and the rest of it and the whiskers and the and I'm not saying people with beards. I'm just saying this guy looks like doesn't shave. That's what he looks like. And I'll get a lot of letters on that. I'm sorry, but. It is, he is, I think, Rosemary, that your question is great, but it could be that Trump knows that if he wants to get the majority of the people in America on his side, he can't let this guy call the shots.
Well, I think the notion of the dynamic it sets up in the White House and can the White House function with that kind of dynamic is interesting, a little bit different, but interesting.
I think
question
one of them will end up out. Which one is the question?
Right, because this has been tried before and has not worked.
Right.
And just as, you know, separate from is he the right person for the job? If you have it appears that, you know, there was a battle and they didn't want to choose. And so they put both of them there.
Sure.
And so one person needs to be in charge. It's interesting. Beschloss, the historian, posted on Twitter the side by side, I guess it was in Reagan White House in the beginning, where they clearly laid out who was responsible for what. But still, You know, it's a tricky thing to do when they really don't decide.
Now, I'm going to predict, since I get to predict because I was right the last time. I'm going to predict that it is Bannon who is out, because they need Priebus desperately, because he and Ryan and all the other senior Republicans are on the same team, and this guy Trump is going to have to make progress with the Congress of the United States if he wants anything. They can't throw Priebus out, but they darn well can throw the other guy out if he gets too over the top.
Yeah, and I'm surprised they didn't do something like put him over at the RNC or something like that, give him something outside of the White House.
Where's Corey Lewandowski going to be? That's another one who he didn't really throw him out, Alan. He had to move him out of the way because he became a problem, but he was still there all the time, and he's still lurking about. And Bannon has that same sort of...
He quit CNN now, so he left the CNN position. So he's,
when did
he's
he quit, Joe?
Friday night.
No kidding.
I mean, he was on the Trump payroll and CNN's payroll, so CNN, how do you explain that? I've never understood that
they
one.
Didn't.
But
just don't watch CNN.
I mean, on the Democrat and Republican side, I mean, you know, same thing with
Donna
Brazile.
Donna Brazile shouldn't have been on it either.
Thanks for explaining that to me, Rosemary. Appreciate it.
Explaining what?
What you were explaining to me about the way this is going to all work.
You're just trying to get back at me, and it didn't really work, Alan, because I don't she-splain.
You do.
I just give my opinions.
All right. So Roger Stone says of Steve Bannon in a tweet, he says, "I join many true Trump supporters happy about the appointment of Steve Bannon. He understands who the bad guys are."
And I know one bad guy is Roger Stone.
He understands who the bad guys are. This is our person who's going to be in the highest.
One of the things that really surprised me about Steve Bannon during the general election or during the campaign, was that you never really saw. I mean, he was in the shadows. You never really saw him. He wasn't very much out at events. He wasn't.
Sure.
He wasn't on the stage.
Kellyanne took the stage.
You know, you never saw him in the spin room after the debates. He was very much in the shadows, and I can only assume that's going to continue. And apparently, there's a very close relationship between Bannon and Donald Trump's son-in-law.
Kushner. Well, apparently that's why Christie was dumped from the transition team. He and the son-in-law had a fight.
Yeah.
Had a disagreement. And so, he's pushed to the side.
Behind all of this is the financier Mercer.
Absolutely. Hedge fund guy.
That he's what's behind Kellyanne Conway. He's what's behind Bannon. They're all of the same group. And I think the other thing is, if you read about life at Breitbart, in terms of Bannon as a boss, there are a couple of articles about that and what a challenging place it was to work.
Meaning what challenging?
Threatening. He would threaten them that there were lawsuits of coming and going, difficult to leave, demanded they write things that they didn't think were appropriate. Just constant threats. Mm-hmm. And also the whole issue with him and his wife and his children, where after his wife left, there were lawsuits about that. And she wanted to put them in schools, so he goes to the schools that she wants to put the kids in and threatens the people at the schools. So, but in any case, I think it's just really is the kinds of what he did at Breitbart in the last few years that he ran it and really attracted the far-right extremist white supremacists, I think is what we need to pay attention to and
this
know
is
that
like
that's
a
what's in the White
right-wing
House.
Coup, isn't it? Right-wing coup of government.
Naomi writes, I've listened to you since Wednesday and to the media program at 6 p.m. last night and realized that the large corporatized media world is not the fourth estate anymore and never will be again. NPR and our wonderful WAMC will have to make a lot of really tough decisions for the next 4 years with how far out on a limb you are willing to go for the truth and for reporting the hard news. Interesting. I mean, I think that's exactly what I was talking about with the law of anticipated reaction before. What can they do? You don't really know what they can do, but they can do something to hurt you, right?
But you can't be afraid of it, just like the people speaking out, journalists, Americans. It's the democracy, and you have to believe that democracy will sustain this.
And I have to tell you, the three of you, I'm in a much better position than you are, because I'm 75 years old.
Unless they go after Social Security, and everybody, which is another thing we don't know if he will or he won't, because he said both things.
And everybody here, well, if they go after Social Security, I hate to tell you this, Rosemary, it'll be after your Social Security money, not for the people who are getting it now. That's always the plan. That's with the Ryan plan, the rest. We know, says TJ, that Nixon committed treason in 1968 as a candidate. Is it possible that Trump and top staffers have committed treason due to the admission of the Russian foreign minister of a constant contact and bartered away the Ukraine or its eastern part, any Baltic states or Syria, NATO withdrawal for the assistance of Putin, Russia, his FSB? What's FSB? FSB?
Don't know.
For his FSB. Also, his private server directly to Russia's largest bank, for which it is reported a FISA warrant has been issued. TJ.
Yeah, the two things that give me greatest concern about the administration is Trump's connections to Russians and the fact that the Russians were able to meddle in our elections. Now, certainly the U.S. has meddled in other countries' elections, but the ease with which they were able to meddle in ours. Right. And we do not know who he's indebted to. Yeah. We know that he owes money to Russian banks, to Chinese banks, to
German banks,
and what the implications are for that, I think, raise some really serious questions. And I don't know what the watchdog is on that, but it certainly raises some very serious
Julian
questions.
Julian Assange is already on the alert, hoping that Trump administration will cancel out investigations into the WikiLeaks and the Russian connection with hacking. He's already spoken out about that this weekend.
We have to take a break, and we'll be right back, continue our discussion, get to some more letters. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning for this Monday morning, the 14th of November. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Teresa Bourgeois, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Let's go back to some letters before our top of the hour news break.
Dear panel, I am scared to death concerning a Trump presidency. I asked the panel for suggestions about what decent Americans can do to counterbalance this very disturbing situation.
There's lots you can do. Find a cause that you believe in, because there are a lot of them that are going to be in trouble, whether it's reproductive rights or freedom of the press, and invest in them, send them money, get involved, support. I just sent money this weekend to high school scholarships for girls going into college. There's lots of things you can do. March, I don't think that will really overthrow the government. That's not the point, but it's a point of solidarity and a sign that we're watching. We're holding you accountable.
Andy Barowitz on Friday said another thing, mentioned the list pretty much that you had said, but also, start, if you can, start running for your school board seat or
run for office for
a village trustee or go to the very basic core of in your community and try to do something. And if not, at least work with someone who is doing that.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with that. Pick an issue. Learn the issue, you know, the issue that you care about. Learn the details of that issue. Follow who is on your side on that issue and support them, sending letters that, you know, of support and emails and texts and writing about them in your own community, and engage with that kind of, whether it's education or healthcare, whatever it is, at the local level. And then understand who is, what the agenda is against, you know, your issue, and reach out to those people, just because what we need now is focused, positive attention. I think that that's, you know, the core of democracy is that we have the right, and I would say the responsibility, to speak up, and we have to turn this fear and anger into action.
Yeah.
And there's so much we can do.
And the core of democracy is also about something called voting.
Vote.
You know, if everybody had voted, who had a stake in the game, there'd be no question about the outcome.
The did not vote party prevailed in this last election.
Absolutely.
It's unbelievable so what am I saying? What can you do? Well, you got to ferret out the ones who didn't and you got to talk to them.
I think we also need those of us in the opposition to remember what it means to be in the opposition. So when you get all those letters and calls, as we are, to heal the division, okay, that doesn't mean you just like give up on everything you believed in. Just because Trump won doesn't mean he wasn't telling lies and that he still has espoused dangerous ideas. And we need to fight them.
And then there's the question of who won? I mean, you know, you have, right. as you pointed out, more Americans by far voted for Hillary than for Trump. So who won becomes very important in this. I'm sorry, Teresa.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Go ahead and listen.
No, I'm done.
I also think that we need to do some active listening to the people who supported Trump because they're economically insecure.
Absolutely.
Because I think those folks are, I fear that, you know, maybe Trump will do all sorts of positive things and then we can all celebrate that. Mm. But if he does what he has written that he's going to do, then those folks are going to be more disaffected and discouraged than before. And we have to reach out and talk with them and understand their fears, understand what drove them to vote for Donald Trump, and then invite them into the coalition that we might build to rebuild what's going on. So around healthcare or around jobs,
refugees,
or childcare or refugees or whatever it is, well, I think that we need to do some active listening and to really understand those folks who voted for Trump because of their economic concerns.
Eleanor Roosevelt, who knew something about defeat, said that, you know, reach out, make a friend in one of the marginalized communities, because it's one thing to say, I'm not a bigot, I voted for him because of economic reasons. Nevertheless, a vote for Trump was a vote to tolerate bigotry. That's undeniable. And so we have to guard against that as well.
Absolutely. Safety pins, right?
Where's... Yep, I got mine on.
So here's a letter. Hello, good morning. I have to ask, if a professor has a student with an opposing point of view, how do you ignore his or her politics? I know there are several profs on the panel, and that is a supporter, Steve from Del Mar. The answer is, you pray to God there in your class.
I agree. Love them.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah,
that's what
them.
It's
yeah.
all about, debate.
That's democracy.
And talking to each other.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, that's what you do. You just hope that you're
going
to
get
it.
Just keep saying
that.
It over and over again. You know, you're allowed to push back. In fact, you're not doing your job as a student if you don't.
I had the opportunity in the mid-'80s. I worked for an organization called the Roosevelt Center for American Policy Studies, and I spent 3 years traveling around the country setting up events. The person who funded it felt that people of the same views were just talking to each other. And so our job was to bring people together of opposite views into the same room around a certain issue with their elected official and have a debate and a discussion to see where you can find some common ground. And that's really where you build consensus. I mean, you have to bring in people of differing views to talk through these ideas with you to understand where the common ground is.
And Daisy says, Hitler made things economically easier for people, too, and people chose to look the other way. I won't legitimize or normalize this man. He is Hitler. And I, like others like me, will be marching in Washington the day after the inauguration.
Well, see you there.
This march has really taken off.
Yep.
They don't have, by the way, yet. They don't have the necessary permits for the march. So it is possible. It ain't going to happen. But I do know that everywhere I look online, people are signing up and saying they're going to do it. And I know that certainly is true of the Shartok household.
We didn't have a lot of marches in the last 8 years, did we?
No. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it's longer than that. It goes back to before the Iraq War. There were some of the largest anti-war marches
yes.
in this country and around the world. They were not covered well, nor did they make any change in the direction of government policy going into that horrible war. So it's a very good question to say, what good does it do? Except that I would remind you, it's a First Amendment right. It's as strong. In fact, it's even more important than the Second Amendment right to own guns. And getting out there and letting your voice be heard in a public way is basic.
Peaceful.
I think Laura wanted to answer the last reference to Hitler. In regard to media, I think it would be wise to support or oppose programs and issues, but avoid direct attacks on our future president. That's an interesting one, isn't it?
What's a direct attack?
You know, he's a Hitler.
I don't know that I can go along with that.
Well, I think the key is, what are his policy positions? And, you know, what is he going to do on health care? What is he going to do on education issues? Is he going to name a climate denier to run the Environmental Protection Agency?
Yes.
Right. And so then what happens? What happens to the federal workforce at the EPA when you have a boss who's a climate denier? You
know, or the Department of Education, which will probably be eliminated. Anyway, Tom says, who's a stroke survivor in Pocock, isn't Trump just fulfilling a campaign promise when declaring an end to political correctness? I am not sure what defines the line between political correctness and incorrectness, but it seems behaving like a troll goon is now acceptable.
We should not.
I'm sure hearing from the trolls, I'll tell you right now.
And violence should not be normalized. Verbal violence, you know, social media violence, actual violence should not be normalized.
In a recent interview, the president-elect's economic policy advisor stated that the economy should see significant growth in 10 years. How does that sit with a base that it's expecting relatively immediate results? Well, obviously, it is now the job of the, you know, of the administration to start walking it back. You know, saying, oh, yeah, in 10 years you'll see what our efforts are bringing. But we know trickle-down doesn't work, and that's what this is basically going to be. It's going to be trickle-down.
Right. Well, he said he's going to follow the Reagan approach, but read David Stockman's book, who led that approach and then wrote the mea culpa after, because it didn't work. And I know it didn't work. I was in Washington at the time, and within a year and a half, homelessness was, you know, at all-time high, and
Jory says,
oh, hold on.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, we're going to have to take a break. We're going to take a news break. We'll be right back. And
sorry about that.
After this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Teresa Bourgeois. And we welcome you, panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. And we have many, 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 many letters, and we'll go back to those.
Okay, here we go. Love the panel. Best show on radio, TV, or the internet.
Oh, that's so nice.
I hear many sentiments of we need to work together despite our differences, unquote. On one hand, I get it. We become a more unified country, a more unified Congress. On the other hand, in the past 8 years, I don't remember any Republican ever expressing this sentiment.
Correct.
Is it payback to the Democrats in Congress or kumbaya time?
Well, that's essentially how they won. They, you know, Newt Gingrich started this, and the no compromise folks in the Republican House, and so little. It's amazing how much President Obama was able to accomplish in spite of the no compromise folks, and we'll see now that they are in charge and have to govern how that's going to work.
Ray says, R-E-Y, Ray. Trump is going to repeal Obamacare and replace it with Trump Care. Don't you see? He only changes the name. I don't think that's true. I think you're going to
Well, what I've heard that makes the most sense is that they will repeal it, but then essentially keep it in place because they don't really have anything else.
Well, the fascinating thing to me as a person who's been steeped in healthcare for years is to listen to Paul Ryan yesterday.
He's the moderate.
But Paul.
No.
Paul, yes.
He is considered now the moderate. He had been the fringe. But Paul Ryan, Speaker of the House, saying that when he was asked for details on what it will mean for preventive care, he would not answer in detail. And he said, we haven't even written the bill yet. Now, this is a Republican House who, from the moment the bill passed and was signed into law, has said, we're going to repeal and replace, we're going to repeal and replace. And then yesterday, they admit that they have nothing to replace it yet.
Exactly.
What kind of leadership is that?
And what happens to the 20 million people who get thrown off the rolls? Okay, let's say your kid, and I'm not prescribing this, but let's say your kid has a bad disease, can't get health care, and you're somebody who was on Obamacare. All right?
Affordable Care Act.
Yes. Is that violent? In other words, is what's happening to your kid violence? Do you see it as violence? And if you see it as violence, what's to be done about it?
They're not seeing it. I think people are calculating that it was just talk what he said, and everything's going to be okay because he
promised us
he was going to make it better.
Right, I agree with you. But let's say that we're wrong, and that they do eliminate the, as Teresa correctly instructs me, the Affordable Care Act, otherwise known as Obamacare,
right.
And people literally lose what they have right now.
Well, if they do what they have been saying for a long time, they're going to do. So if we trust what President-elect Trump...
Which you cannot do.
And the Republican-controlled House says that they're going to do for years, is they're going to repeal the Affordable Care Act. And if they do that, 20 million plus Americans will immediately lose their health insurance. If they do that, people who are now young people under the age of 26 who are now covered by their parents will no longer be covered by their parents. If they do that, then people with pre-existing conditions who are now have coverage will no longer have the guarantee of coverage. That's what it means to repeal the Affordable Care
Act.
Which
is why what they'll really do is repeal it, but say until we put our program into place, we will keep going along with the provisions. That's exactly why they're going to do that.
Then that's not repealing it. And the
question is... Well, it is in name.
Right.
You know, we're replacing it now, they're going to say.
And the one of the reasons, and in fact, it has worked in many cases. It has insured 20 million more people. It has driven down overall cost of health care. Premiums for some people have risen dramatically. But one of the reasons that that has happened is because in some cases, primarily Republican-controlled states, they have not made it easy for people to enroll.
The Supreme Court decision allowed that.
And so you don't have the right mix of people enrolled in the program. These folks have used this to garner support. And if they do what they claim they're going to do, it is not in the best interest of the people who voted for Trump. And they will soon learn that.
I think we are underestimating them. You already heard Trump this week, far in advance of actually being in office, saying, oh, yeah, maybe this pre-existing condition and the 26-year-old rule, maybe we should hang on to that. Mm-hmm. So they're going to repeal it because they have to for propaganda. And then they're going to put in something that's not as onerous as we had thought.
The interesting question for me in terms of the levers of power is what will the insurance industry do? Because they are very powerful on the issue.
But this is
insurance.
All for them.
Absolutely. What do they think now is in their best interest? And what will the hospital industry do? I mean, I spoke with some people directly involved
right.
in hospitals, and they're very worried that this could bankrupt hospitals. Some of these changes that he's proposing
sure.
could
it's
end up bankrupting hospitals.
Sure.
Exactly right, because they depend on that.
Teal writes to us, looking for suggestions on how to respond to an individual level to Trump administrative actions. For example, appointing Bannon chief of staff. What is the best way to express my disappointment with this? Write a letter, call my congressman. My to-do list right now, subscribe to New York Times, I did, Washington Post, and donate to Planned Parenthood. Okay, who wants to handle this one?
Well, he's not chief of staff, first of all. And you can write letters to the editor. You can definitely talk to your congressman. But it's a long, slow slog, as
no, but
Hillary
letters
said
to the editor
campaign.
Are very red. You're exactly
They're
right.
They're very red. Yeah, they have influence.
I think after the comics I read once that they are number two.
Right.
And, comics and then the letters to the editor.
And read about him. Read about
what profiles
that have been written. So really understand about him, and not just him. Really understand about Reince Priebus and his background in Wisconsin as well. But read what the Southern Poverty Law Center has written about him. Read profiles about him. Really understand him. And then write to your elected officials. Write to Senator Schumer and Senator Gillibrand. Even if they agree with you, it's important for them to hear from people so that they can, you know, get that and tweet about him, talk to people on Facebook about him, expand people's awareness about him.
Trump is already moving towards the middle, says Paul. Why all the doom and gloom this morning? It can't end up as badly as you predict.
Oh, my goodness. How often in this campaign did we say, okay, now he's going to become presidential and he's going to change the tone. He's going to move closer to the man he really is. And I think what we saw was exactly what we got, and now we got to live with it. And we're talking here about how we're going to live with it when we're not happy. This is definitely a liberal slant on the panel, in case you didn't notice.
Right. And I think, you know, we have to hope for the best, but if somebody said, well, you you know, we're all in the airplane and he's the pilot. And so you have to wish for the best that he can land
That's
the plane.
Right.
My concern is we have a pilot who's never flown before. And so that's, and we hope that he has a crew around him who can talk him through how to glide and land this airplane. But I think that the key to do that is to have more conversation about what might happen. If we believe that he's going to do the things that he says he's going to do, the policy-wise, whether it's on education or healthcare or defense, you know, we need to have a conversation about that.
Good day, panel. What do you think Obama's role will be in the future? And that's Bernie from Woodburn.
Well, he's already said that he wants to concentrate. He's picked the issue that he wants to concentrate on, and that's especially federal criminal reform. And that's very well needed. I think he'll be the senior statesman of the party. And it says Obama. It doesn't say Michelle Obama. I think she could be very impressive on health laws, which she was a hospital administrator before she went. She has expressed, up till now at least, no real interest in politics. But she is very influential, and I think we're going to continue to hear from them.
No shortage of issues
to work on.
That's
I also
sure.
Wonder and hope about the Clintons and the Clinton Foundation, and will they—
I hope they keep pushing that.
The Clinton Foundation has done a lot of tremendous work around the world, and we may need that more than ever.
John says if the U.S. doesn't act along with the rest of the world to fight climate change, we may be found liable for the damage it causes, whether or not Congress believes it.
Well, who's going to enforce the penalty against us? I think the U.N. is in big trouble. The presence of John Bolton on the short list on the transition team worries me as much as Sarah Palin and Ben Carson.
Good morning, panel. I almost bit my tongue yesterday when Kellyanne Conway said on Meet the Press that they had a mandate, in quotes. I'll quote the Princess Bride. I don't think the word means what you think it means. You remember what the word is? Liar! Dear panel, I recently received an email stating it was legally possible to eliminate the Electoral College without resorting to a constitutional amendment. Is that correct? Yes and no. It is not correct. To eliminate it, you've got to change the Constitution. But there are measures. If every state, for example, agreed that they would award their electors, and they can do that, proportionally to the amount of vote in the state, you would have basically eliminated the Electoral College. Teresa,
right.
Do you?
I think he won in the system that we have, and that we need to focus on issues going forward. I mean, on the Electoral College, I'm not a student of the Electoral College, but I think that
Slate had a wonderful article this weekend about how the Electoral College has been and was designed to be an instrument of white supremacy and sexism. And that I think this is actually, it doesn't change the results right now. I get that. But going forward, it's a wonderful idea to agitate and work for change in that system, either eliminating it or doing away with the effects of it, as you've suggested.
Right. Well, there are ways, the Electoral College is interesting electorally. I know that's redundant, but if we know that I didn't hear squat during this election period about eliminating the Electoral College, which I almost always hear, but this time I didn't hear. The assumption, I think, from my liberal friends was that
it would help Hillary. Yep.
But now, after the election, we're hearing something else.
Right. I mean, after this election, you got to look back. Twice now in 16 years, we've had, it's a coincidence, it's a Democrat, but two people who got the popular vote and did not get the office. It hasn't happened before 2000. It was back, 100 years ago when we saw that problem. So there is something wrong, and we do need to look at that.
And for me, finite amount of energy, I think we should spend a lot more time focusing on voter suppression and
voting rights. I really think
the voter suppression issues are critical and need to be focused on. It's apples and oranges a bit, but I think if you have a finite amount of energy, I'd put it there.
Bob from Albany says, unless he settles with his accusers, we will soon be treated to the spectacle of Trump testifying in a civil trial. Given his penchant for lying, what are the odds he will do so on the stand under oath when the questioning starts getting tough? That would open him up to perjury charge and possibly a felony conviction. The mind boggles. That's Bob from Albany, except that it ain't going to get to that. They're going to settle.
I can't see a scenario in which he's in court doing that. I think his lawyers and certainly the judge in the case put a lot of pressure on him to settle. That's what Bill Clinton did. It's not a position he wants to put himself in.
And nope. There's just a wide range of cases. That's one thing I've been curious about. What happens to the range of cases? Because there's the Trump University case. There's a situation with the
sexual assault
cases. And then I don't think it's quite sexual assault.
And
but
Gloria Allard.
I don't think you're going to see those.
But there's
going
also the Trump Foundation issues. And I've been curious about what will become of those.
Well, the woman, the attorney general in Florida, who's accused of taking the bribe from him for her campaign in order to not go after Trump University. Yes, she's not just on the transition team. She's up for a possible attorney general for appointment to the cabinet.
Why does Trump not calm his supporters who are being abusive to others? Does he want it? What do you think? I think he does.
He actually did come out and say, you know, he is saddened to hear that white supremacists empowered and emboldened by him are doing nasty things, and he said to stop it.
He said it was news to him.
Well, he had never heard
about
that.
He said he was saddened.
But what about that church that was burned before the election with the Trump saying?
Forget notice what was happening in the hall when you were speaking at the rallies.
What he was saying at his rallies. It was so disingenuous.
Or in the schools.
In the good old days, he said, do you know what we used to do?
It was so disingenuous. But the fact is that his leadership is needed now to step up and say, you know, this is not right. Stop it. Even though he instigated it, to stop it.
Yep.
And for the suggestion that in the protests that he and Kellyanne Conway and others have said, well, it's up to the Obamas and the Clintons to come out and stop this. But it's not. He fomented this. He needs to deal with it.
It's all Harry Reid's fault.
Oh, my goodness, Harry Reid.
What did you make of the 60 Minutes interview?
With Trump, you
mean? Yes. Wesley Stahl, Donald Trump. 1 hour, 60 minutes.
Anybody listening, if you haven't seen it, go listen to it. Go read the transcript. It was amazing. What did you think, Joe?
I thought it was, I mean, I looked at it from the Wesley Stahl approach, which I think she was great. And I think she did a really good job. I thought the first segment was strong. And I thought then it just started to devolve into not making as much sense.
Yeah, well, that's his pattern. He's in the debates, that was true. He started out strong and then ran out of steam. The thing I hear the most comment about, and it goes back to my hope that Hillary gets a pardon, was that he kept saying, well, you know, Hillary's done a lot of bad things. And Leslie Stahl said, yeah, but.
No.
Approving of it. That's the criticism.
I disagree with that criticism because he was just going on and on and on. And she goes, I know, but. Meaning, I know what you're saying. I took it completely that way.
Okay.
I understand what you're saying. However, and then she went back to get to her point because he was just rambling.
So it wasn't like she was accepting
I don't think so at all. I took it as, I know. Like, you know, so you like the kid, I have to go to the bathroom, I have to go to the, I know. But right now we have to do this.
Okay.
And that's sort of how I took it. I thought it was
interesting. I think she is a great interviewer, and she was really good in the Trump-Pence debate after he was picked as the nominee.
Yeah. Michael says, I think the Times letter is a subtle mea culpa for their continuing to predict almost up to the last hours that Hillary Clinton was going to win by up to 84%.
Well, that wasn't the whole newspaper. It was one column.
Well, except that it was in the newspaper, and it was every time. And that's, by the way, how I decided he was going to win, because I would look at the 84%, and then I would look at the national polls, which they had right underneath it, and the national polls were showing Clinton 1 point, Clinton 2 points, and I watched that 40%, which never moved off the dime. And that's how I came up with it, but I'm not proud of it because I didn't want to
create an atmosphere of inevitability, I think, that was not true.
John says, we need to make clear to the politicians, to the trolls, the apologists, that A, this is not about Trump, this is about the fascist takeover of three branches of government. B, we are going to fight the fascist tooth and nail.
Truth and nail, I like that.
Yeah. Okay, and then we heard from Peter, who said, some people close to Trump have suggested that Harry Reid should be tried for treason for his remarks about Trump.
Kellyanne Conway, it was outrageous. I'm sorry.
Just remind everybody what Harry Reid said.
Harry Reid put out a statement expressing his views, very strong statement, his views about Donald Trump.
Said the guy who was retiring.
Said the guy who's retiring.
He said that ISIS was celebrating and innocent people in this country were fearful. He's never seen people so fearful about the results of an election.
I think
don't see anything treasonous in there. I see an expression of First Amendment rights.
Right. He has the right to do that. He's a U.S. senator. And then Kellyanne Conway essentially threatened legal action against him.
Try it.
And but that's a very scary thing. She has to realize what her position is in now, and to come back and threaten your opponents
with jail and
with
treason
jail
trial.
And treason for speaking their mind is a very she needs to be given a civics lesson and a copy of the Constitution.
All right, we are out of time. Thank you all very much for being here. I appreciate it. We have my thanks to Alan and Rosemary and Teresa. Thank you for a great hour and a half. We'll be back with more panel tomorrow and more show after this.